It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Thursday, October 22nd, 2014. Primetime Sports on your radio, on your television, on the Sportsnet family of networks. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk show. It's Primetime. Bob McCowan and Ken Reed in our Toronto studios. A little bit later on, Glenn Healy, NHL and Sportsnet, will join us on the program with his own unique brand of analysis.
He stirred it up last night.
He stirs it up most of the time. We'll talk to him in just a few minutes. But tonight, finally, now I don't know, have we had a game that I've been, a Thursday night game?
We've had a good game, close games.
Turned out okay.
Yeah, the first few games are absolute blowouts, and trust me, coming on.
I'm just trying to think if there's one that was really, before it happened, I was actually interested.
No, there has been no really hyped up key Thursday night matchup, I don't think, this season, like that you're actually quite pumped to watch.
Yeah, where you look at the schedule, that'll be pretty good.
Yeah, we haven't had one of those.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the season, I'm not sure you would have said that. I don't think anybody, I think there were few people who thought that San Diego was going to take the next step.
But here we are. We've got a doozy.
The Broncos against the Chargers, albeit in Denver. If it was in San Diego, I think I'd give the Chargers a much better chance in this one. But nonetheless.
I think the line is 9.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're expecting a great game. Mm-hmm. At least the bookmakers aren't, but I am. I'm interested to see whether the Chargers match up at all with the Broncos. Here's our own Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. More pumped for this one than normal, for sure, but, well, I mean, it might be a game.
San Diego a little short. They were the only team to go into Denver last year and win, and that was in Week 15 while they were getting hot to make the playoffs.
Yep.
And they almost did it again a month later to the day in the divisional playoffs, losing 24-17. So San Diego, if you recall, has kind of been Peyton Manning's Achilles over the years. They knocked him out of the playoffs twice when he was with the Colts and came in heavily favored against the Chargers. So I think the game has good billing from that standpoint. Unfortunately, San Diego, which has had a bunch of injuries, is really decimated right now in the secondary, which is not a good
development. No, not if you're playing Peyton Manning.
Yeah, Brandon Flowers out with a concussion. Two other cornerbacks are questionable. That's why I think it could be a comfortable Denver victory tonight. But historically, the Chargers play the Broncos pretty tough.
Don, you mentioned maybe Bob's not giving San Diego enough credit. Do people give Phillip Rivers enough credit? Because he's passed for more yards than, say, I don't know, Peyton Manning this year.
Well, he has started to generate MVP buzz this year. And it was, you know, largely on the 5-game winning streak. They lost their opener at Arizona, really one bad quarter in the fourth, gave that game away, and then they lost last week. Had they won last week at home against Kansas City, they'd be coming in, you know, in first place at 6-1 against 5-1. I think the Chargers are legit, but I wonder if I think they're on their third center already, and I think they've lost Danny Woodhead at running back. I think the injuries could start to take a toll. It'll be interesting to see if they play them tough tonight. I think they hang around for a half. Mm-hmm. And I think in the second half, Denver starts to pick apart that secondary.
Manning has struggled against John Pagano's defenses in the past. Do you expect that to happen again, or the injuries open the door kind of to Manning to have a big night?
It makes it tougher, but Pagano usually plays Manning real boldly and sends some pressure, takes some chances, doesn't sit back and wait for Manning to carve up a pass defense. So I think he's going to play that way. I just don't know if he has enough bodies tonight to send waves of people at Manning. So if this was in San Diego, I think it would be even easier to imagine the Chargers pulling the upset. But again, they did play very well there once in December, once in January, so it's not as if that's a distant memory. And remember, Mike McCoy was the Broncos' offensive coordinator in Manning's first year in Denver in 2012, so he has a pretty good feel for that team as well.
Phillip Rivers is a kind of he's been an interesting story as I think back to, you know, his arrival in the National Football League and what was expected of him, and what he's been surrounded with has mitigated his ability to shine. But it would seem, and winning does this, maybe it's nothing more than winning, but is Rivers coming into his own? Is he starting to demonstrate the ability to be a top echelon quarterback?
Well, you remember, Bob, I mean, the last 2 years before last year, people thought he was in serious decline.
His
game was really going the other way. He gets McCoy there. Ken Wisenhunt was the offensive coordinator. It seemed like a really nice fit because he kind of took to what they were asking him to do, which was get rid of the ball quickly, really throw a lot of shorter passes, and his game came back to a level. So, you know, if this season continues and the arc that he's on continues and he is seriously in MVP talk at the end of the year, it's going to look like a little bit of a career renaissance here because of the last 2 years were so much better than the previous 2 years. But I think he's one of those quarterbacks that's clearly in the top eight, and it does depend to a degree on who's around him. He's had some good teams. Remember those Charger teams went to playoffs, I think 4 out of 5 years, went 13-3 1 year. Blew the number one seed to the Patriots in 07. They had some years, or 06. They had some years where they were really good, but they didn't have the playoff success usually in those years.
Well, would it be fair to say, though, that their defense was probably more responsible for that than the offense? Would that be unfair?
I don't know. I think their offense has usually led the way when they've won. I mean, in the Schottenheimer era, they usually had a pretty decent defense, but it was more about their offense. And I think when the North Turner had them going to the playoffs 4 or 5 times, I think it was more their offense. So they had Gates and they had a couple good receivers and Vincent Jackson, people like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was more offensively led than defense. I think the Chargers defense has been generally the second chapter in that story.
And yet, Rivers was not, by your own acknowledgement, not considered among the truly elite quarterbacks in the National Football League, in spite of his team having had some level of success.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think people didn't put him in the top five. They didn't put him in the conversation usually, obviously, with Manning, Brady, Rodgers, Breeze. That didn't happen. But I thought he was there kind of in that second tier.
And when he was drafted, he was thought of as potentially being that kind of quarterback.
Absolutely. I mean, you remember he was swapped for Eli Manning.
That's right.
On draft day of 2004. The interesting thing is, and how many times would this happen today, we didn't see Phillip Rivers for 04 and 05 because Drew Brees was the quarterback. Phillip Rivers might not happen today because he certainly wouldn't sit for 2 years if he was taken as high as San Diego took him in 04.
Well, San Diego wouldn't have sat him, is the answer, I think.
Yeah.
They probably wouldn't have taken him, but you know, today quarterbacks are drafted and they want him to play as soon as possible.
Well, let me ask you this. Is he better? Would they have been better off keeping Drew Brees? You could make a strong case they would have.
Oh, I think I'm a big Brees guy, and I know he's had a rough year this year. But I think Drew Brees is unquestionably one of the elite quarterbacks. And, I mean, if you look over the last half dozen years, I mean, I take Brees over Rivers with due respect every single time. Are you telling me you don't?
Won. He certainly hasn't won.
No, I know.
To a degree.
I know.
Brees. I mean, Brees has won far beyond what Rivers has done. And, frankly, production-wise.
Oh, way above.
Brees went to the great, the perfect offense for his talents.
Yeah. I mean, True Brees is a great quarterback. Phillip Rivers is, I think, in my eyes at least, just the last couple of years now achieving what I thought he was capable of, and I think what the San Diego Chargers thought he was capable of. But if you tell me, would I have kept Drew Brees and moved Phillip Rivers along if I was San Diego? Sure. I got to buy that. Don't you?
I think most people would.
Sure, I think so. Kenny?
Can I kind of switch gears here and just talk about Don, what you expect, not from Percy Harvin with the Jets this week, but from maybe the circus that could surround his first game with the Jets, and just how he'll fit in given his history with Minnesota and Seattle, and how he's going to fit in with a Jets team that's 1-6.
Well, he's going to be on his best behavior now. It's like getting called out in class for being a screw up. You certainly, for the new teacher, you're going to be good for a while.
For a while.
I'm interested to see when he doesn't get the ball as much as he'd like, maybe over the course of two or three games later this season. And they don't have much on offense. So logic tells you they are going to get him the football in a lot of different ways. They're probably run the now very aptly jet sweep and pitch him the ball. They could do bubble screens. He could touch the ball on special teams, and he could be a deep threat if they want to throw him the ball. I think that's how starved for playmakers they are, obviously, in that offense. However, if Geno Smith doesn't connect with him early on and it goes three or four games into his tenure, is he going to have a smile on his face for a team that may be hopelessly buried at that point?
Yeah.
That's what everybody's wondering, and that's what everybody's, now kind of prepared for with the two strikes that he's already had against him.
Do you think it's on his mind, man, I'm going to New York, and I better behave, or I'm going to be on the cover of the Post. I'm going to be absolutely everywhere. Has that thought gone through his mind at all?
Probably not, and it should, but it probably hasn't, because
he is what he is, right?
What's been reported is true. He's a candidate for the doesn't get it club,
and
never will.
Wow.
Well, he's not the first wide receiver we've seen that has said that. I mean, both Geno Smith and Michael Vick have come out publicly and said what you would expect him to say, that he won't be this way with us.
Vic used the words monster. He would be a monster with us.
Whatever that means. But but they don't go on to define exactly why he won't be, Jekyll and Hyde, if you will. He's not going to turn into Mr. Hyde.
If you can't fit into the world champions, which was pretty much a magic carpet ride last year, won the Super Bowl, Pete Carroll is widely seen as a great players coach who cultivates an atmosphere that players seemingly want to be in and want to play in. You can't do that, and yet you're going to go to a team that is kind of known a little bit for dysfunction, a little bit of chaos, and losing, and you're going to be okay there. It doesn't really pass the sniff test.
No, it's either the perfect fit or the worst fit ever, depending on what your prerogative is on this whole thing. I mean, if you want to add a guy to just an absolute circus, Harvin.
And as I said, it's not unusual with wide receivers.
No. They're flamboyant players.
We've seen plenty of wide receivers that have great skills that have moved from team to team and have been allegedly problem children.
Well, they want the ball, right? Get the ball every time.
I mean, can you cite the case, Banks, of a problem child wide receiver who moved around and wound up reforming himself?
No.
I can't think of one.
No.
No, they are what they are.
Mr. Owens and Mr. Ocho Cinco, or whatever he's calling himself, back to Chad Johnson these days.
They are what they are.
Mind.
Yeah, Randy Moss to his
Moss and
Randy Moss.
Chad went to New England and was a good Patriot, but he didn't have any game left at that point.
Yeah. Moving along, Cleveland Brown fans, I gave them a warning last week. You looked at the schedule of the next three games, and the combined total of wins of the Browns' next three opposition was 1.
Yeah.
Well, now it's 2 because they got waxed by Jacksonville, and they get Oakland this week. And unfortunately, Oakland is still winless.
Isn't it illegal to lose to Oakland?
It should have been illegal to lose to Jacksonville. And I mean, I think all it really said to me was what I thought last week. It's a nice story, but this is a work in progress. This is the Cleveland Browns aren't a finished product by any stretch of the imagination.
They're really not good enough to be favored no matter where they play. That's the issue.
That's right. Even the victory over Pittsburgh, which kind of everybody went, wow. Not because they beat Pittsburgh, which is a significant achievement if you're Cleveland Browns fans, Cleveland Browns fan anyway, but that they blew them out. Kind of raised that bar of expectation. And then they're going to Jacksonville to just lay an egg. I mean, what do you think about Oakland? I mean, I think this is the worst possible scenario. I said it last week. It's just three dangerous games.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I, your point's well taken, because this team wasn't ready to have the luxury of throwing their helmet on the field and winning games. And no matter what, that's what we all kind of set them up for. And they bought into it a little bit. I mean, the biggest thing, they were up 6-0 in that game just before halftime. They went for a fourth down that I think they got them a little bit. They got ahead of themselves. They should have kicked the field goal.
That's right.
Go up 9-0, and we're going to defend that in the second half. And what they did was woke up the Jaguars. They went for fourth down. The defense made the big stuff. Three plays later, Jacksonville scores a touchdown, and instead of 9-0 at halftime, it's 7-6 Jacksonville, and the Browns were like, thanks for coming, and closing up shop.
Yeah, they didn't show. Yeah,
and that was, to me, a coach who overread his hand at this point in that team's development, and he should have taken the points and said, we are going to scrape for everything we get, because that's who we still are. And instead, he kind of said, "We're in Vegas. We're playing with house money, and we're rolling large." And I think it came back and bit the Browns in the butt.
Very quickly, are you a Dallas believer? Are you there yet?
I'm getting there, just because their formula is pretty solid, and I think they're smart enough. They're going to ride it. They're not going to put Steven Strasburg on a pitch count. They're going to let DeMarco Murray carry this team. And if they back off, it's at their own peril. And I understand they can't, you know, burn him out completely. But I think everybody's on board in Dallas, and the formula is working. And it takes everybody kind of buying in that this is how we're going to win games. And I hate to do it again, but when you look at their schedule, their schedule really doesn't get tough till about late November, early December. They could really have a cushion by the time they get there.
I love the Strasburg reference, but immediately it evoked an image of Steven Strasburg in a Cowboys uniform, and presumably he'd be a quarterback. And I wonder how kind of quarterback he would be.
Kind of Chad Hutchinson like. Remember him, the old baseball?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Well,
I think he'd look something like that.
Is the Dallas a Dallas revival, if that's indeed what's going on here? And all the good Baptist friends in the Bible Belt will appreciate that reference, I suppose. But
they're tuning in.
Is a Dallas revival good for the NFL? Good for football?
I thought that's where you were going with that question. I think it is. I think they just are one of those teams that, you know, everybody has an opinion about them. Everybody pays attention to them. Jerry's right about that. And they've been so mediocre for so long, and they're never inconsequential, but they have not been a real player. And I think it is probably good, because you do love them or hate them, and there's very little in between, and they make for good spectacle, and the stadium and the owner and, you know, the history, it's all so absolutely stereotypical, excess and over the top NFL. And I think the Cowboys, when they win the league, probably a rising tide lifts all boats.
You know, you reference, when you think of the Dallas Cowboys, I always reference the New York Yankees. I mean, it's sort of the same thing in two different sports. And I've never, as I'm sitting here listening to you say that, I've never been able to get over my dislike for the New York Yankees. If the Yankees are playing, I will always hate the Yankees.
Like the evil wrestler.
Yes. And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know that I feel that way about the Cowboys anymore.
They're pretty love or hate. They're the love or hate with the Cleveland Browns out of negativity, aren't they?
Well, but that whole thing with the Browns and the Cowboys is so long ago, and the Cowboys being really the Cowboys, right, being a great team, is so long ago. I'm not sympathetic, but I'm neutral now.
Well, did you hate the Yankees in, say, 1991 when they stunk for 10 years?
No, I enjoyed it like hell.
You still hated them. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but your point is good, because you're right. 8-8 does that to you. It makes them, you can't work up the good fervor that you could. And I do think people still either care to root for them or against them. But it's not as much fun when they kind of are just middle of the road, you know, not not anything to fear, not anything to really get behind and sell out for either. And that's been their state for 3 years now, at least, if not more.
Well, I hate their owner. I'll never stop hating Jerry Jones. But they're, when I see pictures of their head coach, he looks like a grade three teacher, doesn't he?
Yeah, he is. He does have.
He doesn't look like a football coach. He looks like somebody who's pats little kids on the head at recess.
That's nice, though. Positive encouragement's the way to go in modern
society.
Well, no,
but I want him if I'm gonna give me Johnson or give me some. Give me one of the old Dallas Cowboy coaches were easy to hate, because they had that larger.
Did you hate
than
Tom Landry?
No, Landry was like grandpa.
Was kind of fun to
Well, I did
has a little swagger to him.
You're right.
He was befuddled half the time, but I don't know. I hear you about Garrett. He's a very nice guy, and yet he engenders no passion one way or the other.
Well, no,
he's a backup quarterback career-wise, and those guys they get hit once every 3 years, if they're lucky. So,
what's the rev?
Well, that's why he's so nice, because he doesn't get hit off.
Doesn't have you don't have any image of him playing. A backup quarterback just learns to get along and carry the clipboard and make a nice living for himself without really ever.
He carries a clipboard,
a risk or a stand, and it kind of fits his personality.
He carries a clipboard and walks up and down the sidelines. That's what he did during his NFL career. What is he doing now? He's carrying a clipboard and walking up and down the sidelines.
And getting paid handsomely.
Well, I know he doesn't.
I'm happy to carry your clipboard, Bob. It's a good living.
As well, you should.
I know my role.
There's a place for everybody, and everybody in their place.
Happy I found one.
Well, I'm looking forward to tonight's game. I don't think I've said that all year on a Thursday night, but I hope it's a game. I think there's a chance it's a game. I hope there's a game in this thing. Go Chargers, that's all I can say. For no particular reason. I just want a good football game, and I think this
Fair
could
enough.
Be one.
I'd like a good one, because we come on right out of the football game, and some nights you're sitting there going, okay, it's 58-2.
Yeah, just 12 people watching.
This is awesome. Yeah, exactly.
Banks, enjoy it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
See you.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Don.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Now we're going to take the break now, and then Mr. Healy's going to join us.
I love that you just throw around the word hate when talking about a football team and a football coach.
Why am I blanking? Who was the Oklahoma coach who went to Dallas? And I'm just blanking on his name. Yeah, Switzer.
Walsh is the man.
I hated Switzer. Didn't you hate Switzer?
I don't hate anyone named Switzer. Hate's a strong word.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
hated Andre the Giant when he turned on Hulk Hogan.
Well, now you see, your reference is totally different. You're clearly not a football fan. You like wrestling.
Wrestling, sports entertainment.
Wrestling.
Hate's just a strong word, but I love the way you say it. Because you actually mean
Switzer.
It. Like the T is stressed.
What
hate.
A dink. He was
hate.
A dink. And Johnson was a great coach. I didn't like him at Miami, and when he was at the University of Miami.
The U?
Yeah. And then I hated him even worse when he went to the Cowboys, because he absorbed that Jerry Jones swagger.
That aura, that swagger,
I'm with the Cowboys now. This is America's team.
And it was. It worked.
Yeah, but I didn't like it.
You don't have to like it.
Hate. See, that's why I hated him.
Do you hate the Montreal Canadiens?
No.
Okay, because they would be the equivalent of the Yankees or the Cowboys.
Yeah, but I used to hate the Montreal Canadiens when I was a Leafs fan.
Right, because the Canadians won all the time, and the Leafs.
But I'm not
a
Leafs fan anymore, so now I don't hate the Canadians anymore.
Which brings us to the question: what are the Leafs? I'm still want to know, because a lot of people hate the Leafs, but they never win anything. So why the hate?
Because they like them to lose.
There you go.
They're happy when the Maple Leafs get the tar kicked out of them.
Exactly.
It's that anti-Toronto thing.
Right.
Which prevails across this country.
Right. Taking pleasure in the misfortune of others. As my friend likes to call it, because he just goes, hee-hee, and he laughs at you.
Well, perhaps you could ask Healy this question.
Maybe I will.
As a former member of the Toronto Maple Leafs for an hour or two.
Yes.
Maybe he could identify with the Toronto/Montreal or Toronto/the rest of Canada.
Right.
We hate anything Toronto. Sentiment.
He also played for the Rangers and the Islanders, which I find is really interesting because people on the Rangers hate the Islanders, but that hate goes back to years when the Islanders were good way back in the 80s.
Well, and the whole story there is Healy couldn't keep a job. And that's really the story of his entire miserable little career.
He's doing pretty good.
But we've salvaged him now.
He's on your show. He's on To the Point with Kiprios. Got everybody riled up last night talking Ovechkin.
All right, well, we'll talk to him about Ovechkin.
I want to talk to him about getting the pucks in deep.
Really? That's PID, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a PID. Yeah, it's a new analytics stat.
25 minutes past the hour. If you can stomach any of this, stick around. Otherwise, have a nice night. We'll be back. It's primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, 26 before the hour. Cowan and Reed in our Toronto studios. Here's Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet. We really need a better name than that, don't you think, Heels?
Yeah, I think we got to be more creative. You know, we've got a lot of sizzle there. So let's continue the sizzle and put some steak to the name. What do you think?
I don't know what it, steak. Hockey steak.
Yeah.
No.
It's way out of my league.
It's to the point. It gets the message across. What are you watching tonight? The NHL on Sportsnet. There's no mystery around it.
When I was at Pickering High School, they never asked me questions like this because they knew I didn't have the answers for them.
Well, yeah, it's not the NHL on Sportsnet. It's not really a true or false question.
Oh, it's my fault now.
Right. The NHL's on. It's the only place it is on.
Yeah, that's
true. 800 games. Well, where else are you going to watch it? Watch regional games? Knock yourself out.
Yeah. Well, if you've got enough time to watch regional hockey games, you need to get a job. That's what you need. Now, because I am not compelled, contractually or otherwise, to watch every minute that you hockey pucks are on the air, which is virtually every hour of the day, I'm led to understand, I missed you and Kiprios apparently going at it about Ovechkin. Was this worthy of regurgitating at all?
Well, it may be the stupidest thing that Nick has ever said, and that is Ovechkin is coachable. I mean, here's a guy with 51 goals who was minus 35 last year. What are you teaching this guy? He's gone through 5 coaches in 10 years in Washington, and he has a contract that takes him to 2021. The only contract longer is ours. And obviously, he is not coachable and probably will burn through 3 more coaches before this is all said and done. But he does whatever he wants, however he wants, for however long he wants. Because he knows there are $124 million reasons why he can do that. And maybe if Glenn Healy had a $124 million contract, I might do the same thing too. But he's not a coachable asset.
Okay, so if you were the coach of the Washingtons, what would you try and get him to do? And this may be a very obvious question, but I want to stay obvious for the moment. We'll get into more in-depth analysis from you in a minute. But what's the, you know, okay, here's a guy we all know, highly skilled, can put the biscuit in the basket. What else do you want him to do? What's the message to Alex Ovechkin?
Well, you have to play without the puck as well as with the puck. He's great with it. 51 goals tells that. And the numbers he puts up are electrifying. But most of the game is played without the puck on the defensive side of it. I would ask him to play well in all 3 zones, be a 200-foot player. And I would ask him to curtail his shift length to something under 4 minutes.
Yeah, he's
slight exaggeration, but if he's not wearing scuba gear, I don't know what he's wearing. But this guy just takes as long a shift as he wants. And, you know, he's a great player. I'm not bashing him for what he's accomplished in his career, but I do find that team more than any has burned through 5 coaches in 10 years with him as a player. And that they haven't won anything. They haven't been close to winning anything. That's the bottom line to me. You want to be a player in this league and get lots of points, knock yourself out. You're going to make lots of money. He already has a lot of money. But wouldn't it be nice to dance around Russia with a Stanley Cup ring on your finger?
Does he care about that, Glenn?
Well, that goes to the core of the player. And, you know, every player that I played with on good teams, on winning teams, did care about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when they put your name on the Stanley Cup, they don't put your first name. They'll put Glenn on there. They put Bobby Orr on there. Bobby's the only guy, I think. They just put your last name, you know, an initial and your last name, because it's your family that helped to get you to that Stanley Cup, that drove you to practices early in the morning. And when your name goes on, it goes on forever. So isn't that kind of a legacy that you want to have as a player in the NHL? Because he's got everything. He's going to have the records, no question. Check that off. He's going to have lots of money. Check that off. Great life from now into forever. The only thing that's missing is that little spot in his trophy case where he's got a Stanley Cup. And if he wants to play the way you have to play with regards to being a good team guy, a 200-foot player, limit your shifts, do everything for the team, then he's going to have to change the way he plays.
Okay.
Otherwise, hey, we've already seen, you know, the recipe. We saw what happens. They have a great season, he gets lots of goals,
yeah,
and they have a good long summer.
So, as a former player, having been in a lot of rooms with a lot of guys, you know, some great players, and some not great players, on good teams and not so good teams. So, is part of the responsibility here, if in fact you are correct that this is a guy who coaches can't get to, and I think you are correct there, is it then, does the responsibility for getting this guy to understand the commitment to team and to winning, to W's as opposed to G's, goals, is the responsibility on his teammates? Does somebody need to grab him by the throat and say, you know, this is what we need?
Well, when you're making $10 million and, say, someone like Glenn Healy comes up and he's not making that and tells you the way the world should be, you really think he's going to listen to me, or he's going to listen? He might listen to Mark Messier, but that's not the way the structure is going to be on that team. He's the wolf on the team, the only one with his tail in the air. I don't think, when I watched Ovechkin in Sochi, and I saw his act for his country, if you're not going to fight for that in your country, when the Olympics is in your country, I don't know what you're going to stand for.
Yeah, well, and a guy who threatened all kinds of things if he didn't get to go. Like, he was going come hell or high water.
Yeah.
Even if the rest of the NHL wasn't going, he was going to go.
And how'd that work out for that team?
Well, crummy, right?
Hey, Glenn, one of the coaches that Ovechkin went through is Adam Oates. Now, Adam Oates, as we know, played with Brett Hull. Brett Hull, right-handed shot, liked to kind of sit in the weeds on the off wing, rip his shot, you know. Was Brett Hull a coachable guy? Here's a guy who won a cup. Was Brett Hull coachable, and what's the difference between a Brett Hull and an Alexander Ovechkin?
I think when it was on the line, Brett kind of figured it out that,
right,
you know, being minus 35 is not acceptable. You know, you've got to go back to 1967-68 when they started keeping track of plus-minus stats to find he's won it. He's got the trophy. If we're giving a trophy out for the guy who scores the most and is the worst without the puck, he's the winner. Nobody since 1967-68, since they recorded it, has done better at this than him. So, you know, the Washington Capitals, to me, they're a good team. I think they potentially are a playoff-bound team. I think they've made that much improvement, particularly in their back end. But, you know, just saying that, it is difficult for coaches to have that kind of a player and to work with that kind of a player. Is it impossible? Can Trotz get through to him? If anybody can, Barry Trotz may be the guy, because I find him to be delightful, a player's coach, and a coach that everybody loves to play for. That's why he lasted so long in Nashville.
Well,
and all of that put together, though, he's got a very unique player in Ovechkin.
Ovechkin's even through six games so far. I know it's only six games, so can you say it's working so far under Trotz?
You got to think that. I mean, they've got one loss in regulation, and that was against the Edmonton Oilers, and arguably could have won the game and should have if it wasn't for Ben Scriven.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a great jousting with Kipper and myself. And, you know, sometimes when you do that to the point, which is the segment, you know, we all kind of, our hockey brains think alike, and sometimes you have to take positions. Maybe you don't fully embrace, but you've got to, you know, we got to have a show. So,
right.
Okay, I kind of think I can go on that side of this argument, and sometimes it's difficult to pick that. The one that's the poison pen that you go, oh, I can't believe I've just said that. I mean, last week, Doug McClain and I were talking about Teddy Nolan. He called out the Buffalo Sabres, and I'm never about coaches calling out, you know, potential players that have to fight for you, but I took that position based on the fact that they played a stinker in front of 19,000 fans, and as a fan, if I spent $140 on a ticket, go stink on the road. Don't stink at home, please.
I got a whole bunch of questions running through my head, and I don't know which one really to ask. I don't see, and I don't think anybody sees, the Washington Capitals trading Alex Ovechkin. But I was sitting here wondering, who would take him? There's a big nut. That obviously eliminates teams just from a cap perspective. But then there's the reality that this guy is a one-way selfish player. And to break down your diatribe into as few words as possible, one-way and selfish, I think are the words that you would want to use. I think I'm accurately paraphrasing what you said. Who would want him?
Well, I'll just add one more layer to it. I think if he had a 2-on-1 with an empty net, and the other player was his dying grandmother for her 50th,
yeah,
he might shoot it.
Yeah.
Not bad.
There are teams that would take him. There's no doubt they would find ways to fit that cap space in. You know, you can trade your, what you don't like, your garbage, for something else. And if the team feels that that's a good thing to get away from a contract that takes you to how many presidents from now, 3 or 4 presidents from now, then they may do it.
Well, no, it's 26. He's got 6 more years.
He's got 6 more. So you're looking at 2 presidents. All right.
Okay.
That's fine. But, you know, there would be teams that would look at that player and say, he's a player that I can work with.
Glenn, you mentioned that if a Mark Messier got a hold of Ovechkin, maybe he could straighten him out. Who's the player in the NHL right now that if he became Ovechkin's teammate could straighten him out and say, look, this isn't flying, you're going to play this way? Is there a player out there that could say that to Alex Ovechkin?
Well, Jonathan Toews could. Mm-hmm. The problem is next year Jonathan Toews makes 10.5. Okay, so yeah. Add the two of them up.
They're not going to be teammates anytime soon.
I guess we're by ourselves.
Yeah.
We've blown through the cap with 4 players.
Yeah.
So that becomes the issue more than anything, you know. And it is different for coaches. I mean, Al Arbor was the best coach I ever played for. And, you know, probably the payroll of the New York Islanders in their dynasty days was just south of $4 million. And, you know, there was different issues with regards to waivers. And you could, you know, push buttons on players that you can't push on players today, mm-hmm. when they know that their long-term deal, you know, kind of trumps your deal. But Al was famous for, you know, sitting guys for periods of time and then just quietly whispering in their ear, do you want to play tonight? Mm-hmm. And out would shoot a Clark Gillies or a Brian Trotche, and yeah, they'd show you they wanted to play tonight, no question. And those days maybe are gone. Maybe those are the glory days that I liked, you know, but sure. It has all changed with, you know, players get agents at 12 and 13 and are very entitled, and as a result can be coach killers, and Washington has proven to be a coach graveyard.
So basically what you're saying from Ovechkin is if he's going to change, it has to come from within.
Totally. And he's got to figure out that to win championships, it's about sacrifice, it's about, you know, kind of all those things that aren't in his resume right now. And if he figures that out, then, boy, that Washington Capitol team could be real exciting for a long time. If he doesn't, then he's heading back to the World Championships just like he did last year. 30 minutes after the Capitals got defeated, he's on a private jet, and he's going to go play for Russia at the Worlds in front of nobody.
Well, last night, it was Washington-Edmonton last night,
was it
not?
Ben Scrivens basically won it for Edmonton.
Oh, did he ever in the third period. Oh my God, the Oilers juggernaut. I was writing them off, telling them they needed to trade everybody earlier this week, and now I look like a complete idiot, which is not hard, by the way. Now they've won 2 in a row, and I guess problem solved in Edmonton, right?
No.
Oh.
Not so much. They went probably about 12 minutes without a shot, and their one shot was from about 90 feet, which is very dangerous. In some leagues, but not the NHL.
It's good for a dump-in.
But they're starting to get guys that are buying in. They're starting to get, you know, the defensive side of the game. It's fun to play with the puck. It's like it's your cookie. It's enjoyable. It's a blast. But there's more to the game than just taking the puck and playing and having fun, and they're trying to figure their way out. I don't know if they've got the right group there to do it. I don't know if they'll ever have the right group until they start making some moves. They certainly need to shore up their defensive side of the game. They need to get players like Nashville has, like a Shea Weber, and, you know, surprise, everybody wants him. But they have the pieces of the puzzle maybe to make that play, whether it's a Yakupov or an Eberle that gets dealt. I know Nashville doesn't like paying him $13 million before he plays his first shift. It's a $14 million contract for a guy playing 50 feet from the net. So
yeah.
They're a good team with a lot of good players, but they're not there yet. And, you know, Dallas Eakins is a tough job. He's got to teach them how to be pros.
Could that be a good marketing tool for, say, Nashville, get in a young guy like Yakupov, a flashy player that they could market? Because it's tough to market a good defenseman like Shea Weber. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's not, you know,
yeah, but after about a week, doesn't Yakupov actually have to do something?
Well, that's just it. That's just it. He'd have to deliver.
Yeah, and I think Nashville recognizes that they need some exciting players. They had to get Mike Ribeiro.
Yeah.
You know, not many people were taking flyers on Mike Ribeiro. He wasn't a player that a lot of clubs were looking at, but it is really hard to find guys who can put the puck in the net. It's difficult. And the, you know, Edmonton Oilers have a bunch of them. So they have some chips that they can move. You know, if I was the Edmonton Oilers, when Yakupov was first pick overall, I would have moved the pick before I pick Yakupov.
Right.
Because there were a bunch of teams that wanted to move up in the draft. And, you know, you look at Olli Maatta, who was drafted 22nd in that draft. If you took him and another defenseman from the first round, a Morgan Rielly and an Olli Maatta, would you have a different Edmonton team?
You would.
You think so? Absolutely. So I would have moved it even before. But I think ownership got involved. And they wanted to keep that pick, and they wanted to draft that player. They didn't want to take Ryan Whitney. The New York Islanders are on record of saying they offered every single one of their picks if they could move up in the draft and take Columbus' second pick. So, you know, there was flexibility for Edmonton to make a different move than they made. They have some flexibility now, and I think they've got a real impatient fan base.
In fairness, it looks like a bad pick now. I don't know. I don't remember what I thought at the time or what the consensus was at the time, but... can I get to one more thing? We got about 2 minutes here. I don't stay up and watch the Anaheim Ducks play. But you know, they were a very good team last year. Made some moves during the offseason. There's some addition by subtraction and some addition by addition. They look really good. I mean, on paper and on the ice. Tell me what you think.
I think they're a Stanley Cup contender in every way.
Yeah, I do too.
And, you know, if I was to pick a team after watching them, you know, I love these preview shows that we do. We do about 100 of them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you haven't seen one practice, one game, and you're picking a team to win the cup.
Yeah.
Well, after watching them for the first couple weeks, they look deep, fast, big. They
got everything.
Off. Good goalie, good defense, star players, Ryan Kessler. You go down the list. It's a pretty good group, and saying goodbye to Timo Solani, as tearful as it may be, and
had to be done.
It had to be done,
yeah.
And that's unfortunate. We all get those pink slips in the mail. I got mine. Thanks, Bill Waters. Everybody gets them, but sometimes it's for the better of the team, and I like the way their team looks now.
Stay up late and watch Corey Perry. That's my advice for anybody out there. He's special.
Yeah, there's not
watch.
Many things he can do.
No.
He's got a terrible shot.
Horrible.
He's not big. He's not tough.
You know what? He never gets a stinker goal either. All his goals look really good. That's man, he's a good
he's
player.
On the highlights every morning. He's a wonderful world-class player in every way. But and the thing I like about him is not only does he play that kind of cute game with all the skill side that we watch, but, man, he's got edge. You want to play against him? Okay, bring it on. These are tough minutes you're going
to
play against.
Oh, yeah, he'll talk to you, too.
Yeah, get your lips ready, too, because you're going to be talking.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he'll talk to you. Heels, you look lovely today. I've never seen you look better.
Yeah, you got a face for radio, absolutely. Thanks, Bobcat.
Glenn Healy of the NHL on SportsCenter. Thanks to him and to Don Banks of Sports Illustrated for joining us, and to Ken Reed for popping in. You look beautiful, too, by the way, tonight.
That means a lot to a TV guy.
Kenny will be on at about 8 a.m. See you tomorrow.